Welcome back to the Tap Room exclusive here at Bottle House Brewery in Cleveland Heights. We are now talking about sours. I'm new to sours too. I've had a couple I really enjoyed, a couple I didn't. I'm not the kind of person who, if I only drink, I don't only drink anything. I'll always try something, and even if I don't like a specific beer, I don't hold that against the style. I feel there's with sours, there seems to be this, if it's not made to a certain standard, everybody just kind of pushes it away. What was it about sours, A, that's kind of made it become popular here all of a sudden, and that made you guys want to kind of focus on doing a few of those here?
First and foremost, it's a style that we both really enjoy drinking. From a brewing perspective, I think it's the most challenging of the styles of beer. It starts with brewing a clean beer, and you building that base that's going to be appropriate for souring is, you know, as challenging as brewing any beer. And then there's a bit of a kind of a wild aspect to the next step, because you're filling barrels and you're adding bacteria and wild yeast, just kind of depending on what style you're going for. So there's an unknown variable there. You don't really know what's going to happen inside the barrel. So there's a lot of maintaining and kind of cultivating these barrels over time, sampling and deciding at what point these barrels are ready. And then when it's time to harvest, you have the blending process. Jason mentioned that a little bit earlier. When we were doing our original sours, we were doing single barrel sours, so we really didn't have that opportunity to blend, and we learned a lot from that process. We were producing fairly acidic beers, that took 2 years. You know, it's the same kind of learning curve that mead has in a lot of ways. You know, you're laying down barrels, and you're really not able to know what the end result is going to be like for several years. So we've since expanded our barrel collection from one or two to, I think we have close to 100 now. And when it comes time to harvesting these barrels, we're now able to go through and select from the barrels that we have ready and say what's going to blend best. There's a lot of creativity and work that goes in each step. So it's really challenging, and it's very rewarding when it's all said and done. And there's so many different varieties and styles with the sours. Obviously, a very approachable style would be a kettle soured beer, which isn't, and they can end up in barrels, but traditionally or typically nowadays they're brewed quickly, and it's more of a tartness. It's more of a one-dimensional sour, and you get those in Gose's and Berliner Weiss and whatnot. And the barrel-aged beers just take it up a notch. You get a lot of complexity in the acidity, the makeup of the acids, and the and again with certain yeasts, like the Brettanomyces family is going to give you all types of funk and flavors. So it's really there's so many variables that come together when you're talking about sours. I think it's really exciting to work with, and again, we really enjoy drinking them.
There's two analogies I really like when talking about sour beer, and one is that it's kind of like having a kid and sending it off to college, where you can give it the best start you can. And so when you're brewing this base wort or beer that you know is going to go into there, you can do everything you can, but once it goes off, it will take on a life of its own. So the best thing you can do is kind of is check in on it, and when you see it doing a certain thing, you try and guide it a certain way, or you wait till it's finished, because you know that beer that's not quite where you wanted it 1 year, you know, we've seen this can be super different at 2 years. We had one beer that we were following for, got to be 2.5 years. And one day we tasted it and it was just fantastic. And it was almost when we had thought, you know, maybe this is destined for the drain. And you learn that patience is really key with that. The other analogy is when talking about Brettanomyces, the wild yeast we use for sour production versus Saccharomyces, brewer's yeast. And they'll say Saccharomyces is like a dog. It's predictable. You can call it. It's going to come when you want it to and do its thing. And Brettanomyces is a cat. It does its thing. And we've watched these beers like, okay, this beer says it's going to take a year to be ready. You taste it 3 months and like, this has fantastic Brett character and has everything you want it to do. And other ones take 2 years and they never do it, or they produce these sometimes fantastic flavors that you weren't expecting. And the unpredictability of it, I think, is something that we both really enjoy, and the challenge of it as well, of what you planned on making isn't necessarily what you're going to end up making.
True. Yep. So when I first met you guys probably about a year ago, you took me through a tour of the back room here, and you kind of talked about, I guess sours can be, you know, a style that probably anybody could do, but not everybody can do well. So when you were first starting out, you kind of talked to me and told me that some of the struggles you were having, and talk about the collaboration aspect, and I guess this goes to really all styles, beer, wine, cider, you know, craft beer, the whole industry is hyper collaborative, and you know, one of the folks that you mentioned was Russian River, who were kind of innovators, I guess, in the style.
Yeah. So the sour world, you know, while growing, was still, you know, if you're looking for answers, there might not be. There's some very closed-lipped Belgians who might not want to share their secrets, and there's some American guys who, you know, started doing this stuff in the 90s and had to find out, you know, the really, really, really long and hard way how to make all this stuff work. And we found that sour producers in particular were very, very willing to share that information. So Brian sent Vinny Salerzo from Russian River. I can't remember what it was about.
I think it was initially about bottle conditioning.
Yeah, because we had our first sour we ever produced was called Vox Maris, and it was kind of a happy accident. Mm-hmm. We had a Belgian quadruple aged in a whiskey barrel, and it had just gotten so boozy and hot and crazy, and so we thought, let's get some cherries in there and see if we can kind of round it out. And then I think we started drinking sour beers, and let's just dump some dregs and some Brett in here and just see what happens. And 2 years later, it turned into this really fantastic, complex beer that kind of got the ball rolling on all this other kind of stuff. And so then we're looking at the challenges, like, how the hell do you bottle condition this hyper-acidic 12 or more percent beer that most yeasts want nothing to do with at this point? And so we started talking to Vinny, and he was really willing to help.
Literally, he's responding to us. I mean, they're 3 hours behind. I'm emailing him at 8 in the morning, and he's responding to me at 8:30. It was fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it was great. And he, you know, I think we bounced a couple ideas off of him over that first year, period. And he was always very willing to share.
I think we still intend to send him beers that, like, 3 years ago that we never did.
Yeah. We've got a lot of things we need
we have
to
a
do
lot of people are supposed to send things to.
But it's been fantastic. You know, and that's, you know, part of what we do here, a big part of what we do is the education side. You know, and that's typically with the customer. You know, it's always surprising. And again, when you're in the world, you don't really, you forget how little you knew before you were in the world. And, you know, things as basic as dry hopping, we're always surprised. You assume everyone knows
what this means. It's 2018, and still people have no concept of
these
what
basic
that
ideas.
Is.
And so when you now you start talking about sours and forget it. It's a whole other world that they're people. But it gives us an opportunity to have these conversations. And then with homebrewers, we started this little homebrewers night, and it primarily goes on during the winter months. But, you know, we've had the opportunity to share our knowledge with homebrewers when it comes to the sours, and they're always very interested in meat as well. It's a really, you know, you kind of pass on the knowledge that you've been passed, and you just kind of keep the ball rolling, keep kind of pay it forward.
But, yeah, sours, there's just a ton of room to grow there. And I'd say still, you know, we've now had a good amount, at least 5 on tap here for over a year or so, even though we've been producing these for 4 years now, technically. Yeah. And there's still just, we get people every day who have never tried them or who have been, you know, like the mead kind of thing, really burnt before. And I think the culprit is, there's a fantastic beer called the Duchess de Bourgogne. It's a Flanders red ale that is exceptionally balsamic vinegary. And I remember the first time I ever had it, I was bartending somewhere, and I thought it was unbelievable, and I think a lot of people didn't feel the same way. And so you get these guys who come in and be like, oh, we have sour beer, and they're like, hands down, not interested, not having it. And you have to kind of convince them that, you know, that was one sour beer. There's lots of different styles, and it's a really open playing field as well. Again, we do we like some of the classic kind of styles that we kind of are loosely inspired by, but a lot of what we do is more in the American vein of all right, what, that's another kind of cool thing is as you taste barrels, you're like, oh, you know what? You had a beer earlier called Idol, which is an apricot sour.
Fantastic.
that beer, we had kind of already just planned to do the apricot, but those flavors were there already. Mm-hmm. So the base beer for that was, you know, something like a Vienna lager almost. And after 6 months in barrels, it had taken on these really unique fruity qualities that were stone fruity. And if you were blind taste, you would have said there was apricot already in there before we had added in for conditioning, all that kind of stuff. And so you kind of let the beer guide you, and you also you can kind of, you know, look at it like you're tasting something and say, you know, oh, you're making a whatever in the kitchen, and you say, okay, you know what, this would be great with this, and you kind of just play around with it that way.
You were mentioning, you know, some people, you know, like I mentioned in the beginning of the show too, some people come in here and they've maybe been burned by a sour or something in the past, and they're just turned off to the style. What? Why? I don't usually, you know, hey, you have a bad IPA, you're like, I still like IPAs. Like, what do you think, what is it about sours that kind of has that connotation to where if I get burned, I'm just done with it? Like, I can't do that myself.
I think that when you're talking about the acidity, that, you know, it's the response. I mean, give someone a little bit of white vinegar or vinegar period, and in the facial response, you have a very visceral response to these flavors. And in fact, you know, evolutionarily speaking, these flavors indicated something was wrong with the food you're about to eat. So I think we have the visceral response to these very acidic, certainly acidic, which is, you know, acetic acid, which is vinegar, and even lactic acid and whatnot. So I think it really burns into your brain when you have a bad experience drinking something like this.
What I like to talk about is, you know, sour beer is the blue cheese of the beer world.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I really love Gorgonzola. That is, but I also understand when someone has an aversion to that. It's moldy, but in the right way. And sour beer is infected beer. You know, the whole history of beer has been, how could we make this beer not sour and infected? And you have these rogue guys in Belgium, and now who are just kind of like, no, this is the way we like it this way.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when you talk about Brettanomyces, and you know, you get weirdos like me and Brian who are like, oh man, this smells really like horsey, and you're like, I think that's cool, and like, yeah, you have these funky, weird, horsey beers that can be clearly very polarizing. So I can kind of see when someone's like, no, I got tricked before. Someone, you know, someone gave me whatever it was, and I'm not having it again.
Goat balls.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think that's something that we offer is a variety of styles in the sour range. I mean, you try our Vampire, it's a blackberry sour stout, and it's sour, but, you know, you could be tricked just thinking you're drinking a very acidic stout from the fruit. I mean, our Pina, it's a pineapple sour. It's, you know, you're not going to go crazy if you try this. So I think that when someone comes in with these preconceived ideas of what a sour beer is, I think it gives us an opportunity to flip them and to bring them over.
And having a variety is the best way to do that, because, you know, color is the first thing you do. So I lay down a flight of sours, and you've got a really pale yellow that could pass for a Pilsner. You've got a beer that could pass for a stout, something, you know, a variety of things, whether it's with fruit or not. And suddenly just that right there will jar someone and kind of be like, oh, that's different than the experience I had before. And it's a more, again, we also try and create the most approachable tap list. So, you know, we have a beer on tap that's one that's very intense and funky and one that's pretty sour. But the rest of them are all can kind of lead you to that point. So it's not like you start off and you're like, here you go, this is the one,
right?
You know, there's a variety there.
Yeah. And Rob, do you have anything that, like I said, I'm new to sours, so I'm still catching up to the style. Like I said, I've had a few. You were talking a little bit about bottle conditioning. So for anyone who doesn't know, it goes through another round of carbonation in the bottle. Is that correct? And then, like, what are the challenges with that? I know you said you had the challenges with that first one and stuff. Like, why does that? What is the challenge in that?
There's a couple of challenges. First of all, when you're using Brettanomyces to make the beer, it always stays around. So there's always a little bit of it in your beer. So if you have any sugars left over in the beer, if it's not completely dry, which Brettanomyces tends to dry the beer out to virtually, you know, no sugar at all in the barrel. But if you bottle these beers with residual sugars left, and then you age them in your cellar, you have a bottle bomb. It overcarbonates, and when you open these things, they explode. So there's challenges on both sides. If you can overcarbonate, and it can certainly, but the acidity prevents traditional yeast, Saccharomyces yeast, from, if you're going to condition your bottle as a home brewer, you're going to add Saccharomyces to the bottle, and it's going to, and a little bit of sugar, and it's going to produce just the right amount of CO2, and it's going to carbonate your beer. That same yeast doesn't really want to hang out in 2.8 a beer with a pH of 2.8 and an alcohol content of 12%. So there's challenges with actual bottle conditioning. We've had successes with it. Our Nova, which is a raspberry ale sour that we did, actually bottle conditioned really, really nicely. But then we resort to forced carbonation as well. So, we have some options on both sides of it.
I think, Rob, you were asking earlier about things we'd like to do in the future, and I think mastering bottle conditioning would be great, because one thing that you can do is take these beers and give them an incredible shelf life. In America, we don't legally have to put a Best Buy date on, but in Europe they do. So some of these Belgian sour producers are famous for putting Best Buy 2060. And these beers will hold up incredibly well, because the reason you want to drink beer fresh is because it might go bad. Well, we already made it bad, and we made it bad to the point that it's where it's want to be, and they'll just develop in a really, really cool way. So if you can master bottle conditioning, you can take these beers and say, yeah, throw that down and try one in 5 years, and it's going to be just as interesting, if not more interesting.
Right. That's awesome. Definitely a learning curve. So on that note, I guess, the learning curve with sours, I guess, is that you never know really what you're going to get. You could have something sitting for 2 years and it could end up being terrible. So as we close out this segment, give me one beer maybe that you guys made that you thought was going to be fantastic and it ended up being a dumper, and one beer that you thought was maybe not going to be so great and ended up being phenomenal.
The only beer we've ever dumped
was, I think, a beer we knew wasn't going to be good from the start.
Right.
And then it wasn't. And we said, well, not that surprising. Right.
Was that the
pumpkin?
Yeah, the pumpkin.
We had like 30 gallon. We had a 30 gallon barrel that was like awkward to fill because it's a weird size. And we had 30 gallons of pumpkin ale that we hadn't sold. And we're like, whatever, just throw it in here, and maybe the Breton bacteria will do something interesting, which it did not.
No.
And that beer went down the drain.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have not had that happen too many times. The one of the weird ones for us was we did a really weird beer. It was a dark saison with honey and ginger.
It was a braggot, wasn't it?
Yeah, it had a good amount of honey in it.
Yeah.
And we put that in a wine barrel and soured it. And for some reason, the ginger in the clean beer was not overwhelming at all. But once the Brett took away all that, all the malt sugars, it became really to the forefront. And it was just great. And we'd check it every 3 or 4 months and keep saying, like, one day, one day, one day. And then one day it was great.
It was fantastic.
It was really, really interesting, cool, well-balanced beer. So that... that beer actually became the start of a kind of a cool collaboration we're doing with Noble Beast. So we wanted to do a barrel swap. And so we emptied the beer from this barrel that over time produced this very unique beer and gave him the barrel. He filled it with his beer. And I think the idea is that we'll pass the barrel back and forth. We actually reserved one keg of that beer. Maybe we'll blend ours with his and create something kind of fun.
Yeah.
That was one that we didn't have high hopes for, and it turned around. Really,
I was literally about 2.5 years in that barrel too. Yeah. So I guess the lesson is be patient. Don't dump
That's that's why I don't brew, because patience is not my virtue. Thank you guys for being here. Tune in next week. We will be going over ciders. Have a great night, everybody.